It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
What I do, we'll be right back. Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Jefferson, the book Red Tail Captured, Red Tail Free, Memoirs of a Tuskegee Airman, Prisoner of War in Germany for 9 months, $32. Contact me, 18126 Brinker Street, Detroit, Michigan, 48234, or call me, 313-368-0674. Thank you.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. A beautiful day here in Hawaii, a little overcast, but we're doing just fine. And I'm so happy, proud, and just absolutely moved by having my guest and this. He's been on the show before a couple times, and that's Lieutenant Colonel Alexander J.
Jefferson.
And he is here with us, and Believe it or not, folks, he trekked across from Michigan in that cold weather to get here to sit and talk to her, and he's just learned. He's now 96 years old and looking very good. I don't know what he was eating, but clearly he wasn't drinking Flint, Michigan water.
You better believe it.
So I'm just excited, and I have also Richard Bronskill in with me, and also Ernestine, the colonel's granddaughter, and we'll be talking with her. And I'm just excited about this, folks, being that it is Black History Month. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be talking about quite a few things, and I just love hearing that story, and I'll just tell you briefly about why I'm so excited and elated. I was born in Mississippi, and if you know anything about Mississippi, for you, the new kids on the block, it was a place where you wanted to be from and far the heck away from. You didn't want to be there. It was a place that taught you that you were nothing, you were worthless. Mm-hmm. The system itself, institutionally, the education system, the police departments, the government, the governor, all really sought to just rip and shred the integrity or the common good of mankind in that state. And so when I was a kid, growing up, I'd always heard about the Tuskegee Airmen, and I knew that what I wanted to do in life and be accomplished and contribute to society and loving an American and wanted to go to the Army, but I was motivated by seeing these pictures of men that were pilots, and they were African American, and they were from Tuskegee, so that was just an inspirational tidbit, but this, what Mr. Jefferson or Colonel Jefferson presents, is history that is still alive. And so those of you who want to call in and wish and have conversation with the Colonel, feel free and call 808-888-5204. We welcome your calls or questions, and if you have anything to add or what have you. But, Colonel, good morning. And,
good morning.
Richard,
good
thank
morning.
You. Well, tell us about the book here. You've added some newness to it, Red Tail Captured, Red Tail Free. Memoirs of a Tuskegee Airman and POW. Mm-hmm. Lieutenant Colonel, United States Air Force, retired. And you also wrote this with Mr. Lewis Carlson.
First edition came out approximately 10, 12, 15 years ago, and I rewrote it, revised it about 5 months ago. Mm-hmm. And it's my lifetime. It's my lifetime being shot down, raised first in Detroit under segregated conditions, naturally, back in the 20s, and up to why I went to the Army Air Corps. In a nutshell, everyone says, Colonel, why did you join the Army? I said, Pearl Harbor had happened. Everyone's at war, the entire country. And I was going to be drafted. And as a black person, black man, drafted in 1944, you become, a buck private, $21 a month, sleeping on the ground. And the opportunity came to join the Army Air Corps because Congress had authorized the 99th being formed. And to be qualified, you had to be a college graduate. I was a graduate of Clark College in Atlanta, Georgia. Came home, volunteered for the Army Air Corps, and made the grade. And as a cadet, learning how to fly. Making $75 a month. What a difference. You must remember now, cigarettes were 5 cents a pack. A loaf of bread was a nickel. A dozen eggs, approximately 15 cents. Why I became a pilot? Academically? Because of the money and the position. And to be an officer in 1944 was a privilege. fighting the system, the vicious, racist system, even at that time. We were considered something. I wish I had the 1925 letter, condition of a report by the Army. It said the Negroes were incapable of firm decisions. We were less than apes. It was a horrible thing. But that's all part of my life, part of the life of going into the Tuskegee Army Air Corps and becoming a pilot during World War II. Let's go on, and we'll deal with the other aspects of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, this book, I read portions of it, the earlier one, mm-hmm. and I got to see the types of airplanes.
Oh, yes.
And I think recently someone was flying one, but I also noticed there's a lot of bumper stickers now with that model airplane. What planes did you train in, and then what did you actually fly in the war and when you were shot down?
Shot down.
What plane was that you were flying?
When I was shot down, I was flying the Mustang, P-51 Mustang. During World War II, the most advanced plane we had, fighter plane. And when I was hit, strafing radar stations, I think I was approximately 200 feet, and the German ground fire came up through it, and I had to pull up and bail out. We had gone through, we started off with regular planes, exactly just like the whites in their program. Steerman, primary for 3 months, then a basic, and HE6 for 5 or 6 months. We graduated, being second lieutenant, went into P-40s, the Mohawk, the one with the tiger tails, tiger teeth on it.
Mm-hmm.
Spent about 6 months with the P-40, went into the JUG, the old P-47, that is anonymous today. Well, we call it the JUG because it could sustain tremendous amount of damage and still come home. Today it's just like the A-10. The A-10 is called the JUG. And finally went into the P-51 Mustang. And today you will see one at some airport under we have one or two with the tail painted red.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're the Red Tails.
And they gave you that name, the Red Tails, because the planes themselves were painted red, and they then just label, you assign that description.
The Red Tail was air identification. We were designated Red Tails by higher headquarters. There was a field next to us in Italy, a field with a white field, and the tails of the 52nd Fighter Group were yellow. The tails of another group were checkerboard. These colors were designated by higher headquarters so that when you approach the bombers, the B-17s and B-24s, they could tell who you were by your tail identification. And we had to relieve another group, and they had used up their fuel and had to go back to the base. And naturally, the bombers looked out and saw us as Red Tails and knew that we were there to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
Air identification.
I see. Now, when you mentioned separate fields, did they actually assign the blacks to their own airfield? Was it?
We had our own airfield in Ramicelli, in Italy,
strictly for blacks.
That's correct, and all under the command of Colonel Davis, Benjamin Oliver Davis, who went through West Point. He graduated from West Point in 1936, and wanted to join the Army Air Corps, but at that time, no blacks were allowed to train with whites. And he was in the first class that went through Tuskegee to graduate black men. And higher headquarters assumed that he was going to be in command of the 1st Squadron, the 99th Fighter Squadron, 16 airplanes, and went to the 99th under his command, started our career in Africa and Italy. But he went through West Point, by the way, during his 4 years. No one spoke to him. He was under the command of the Army Air Corps. The Army. They silenced him, trying to get him to quit. He had the guts enough to say, I'm going to stick it out. And he graduated as a second lieutenant. And by the time he went through Tuskegee, he was a captain. He was slated to be the commanding officer on the 99th. And when enough men were graduated to make the other three squadrons, all these other squadrons joined the 99th, forming the 332nd Fighter Group. And the group was anonymous, just like the white groups in Italy.
And mm-hmm. and your service in Europe in that theater, you went to Dachau or passed through it on.
Well, that was at the end.
At the end of the service.
End of the service.
And what did you take away from that? I mean, that you could share with us today why we have to be so mindful of good government, transparent government, honest government. Can you?
Well, see, Carol, at the time, I had spent 9 months in Germany as a POW, and we were liberated by Patton and Third Army. We were approximately 20 miles away. When we were liberated with the American forces, somebody said, Jeff, there's a place down the road with a lot of dead people. Now remember, no television, no Life magazine, no newspapers, no Newsweek, no one had advertised and publicized Dachau in the United States. We were completely ignorant of it. At that time, somebody said, let's go find it. So we liberated a Jeep. I use the word liberate, but anyway. What do you say? Acquisition?
Acquire.
Oh.
With authority.
We liberated a Jeep and had to go find it. After about 50 or 60 miles, a mile away from it, you could smell it. And remember now, we had no idea, had never seen it, couldn't comprehend it. Piles and piles of dead bodies. Dachau. The ovens were still warm where there were burning bodies. Mm-hmm. The rest of the people walking around in striped suits. Horrifying. We could only take it for about an hour and a half. We had to leave. That was my introduction to Dachau. And I have made many presentations since the war and have had audiences who would look at me and said, well, Colonel, that's a damn lie. It never happened. And you had to look at them and say, by God, what are we getting to? It's frightening.
When someone is that dismissive of a matter so serious and the Jews being murdered and killed by the millions.
And since that, I have watched television stations where the Germans kept records and kept movies of their killing of the Jews. I remember one striking. Line in line of women, naked, holding babies in their arms, walking, lined up, going into a building, a door, the gas chamber. They were told they were going to have a shower. Horribly. And the Germans made pictures of it and kept records. They had a room filled with eyeglasses. 3 feet high. Room filled with eyeglasses. Another one filled with shoes. Horribly. Mm-hmm. was a stark, frightening thought. If Hitler had been successful, black people would be next in line, along with the Jews and the others. Mm-hmm. It's a horrible thought. It's a horrible thought. But that's what life is all about.
But you, after seeing that, I can imagine you were just moved with the fact that to be able to go to war and
yes.
confirm that you were there for a purpose and you wanted to offer to humanity something.
When I came home with the idea to talk about it and open up communication with so many persons who had no idea what's going on in the rest of the world, made me aware of conditions all across the country, mm-hmm. all across the world. Things like that are still going on in Iran, Iraq, Africa, all over the world. The Philippines, think about it.
What would you offer to people that would listen to your message? How can we avoid such behavior or atrocities in the future? What can we as common people do?
Plain, ordinary common sense. It's hard to explain. Because even in this country, in the United States, most gracious, perfect country in the world, everybody's trying to get here. Nobody wants to leave. Isn't it ironic? Nobody wants to leave. We still have some stupid, idiotic, numbskulls. Am I doing
that? Should.
That's right. Right today we have the dreamers. These are people, babies brought up 25 and 30 and 40 years ago and getting ready to be exported back to Iraq and Iran. Others want being kicked out back to Mexico. Life.
Hold that thought. There's a phone call. Would you like to take a phone call?
Sure.
This is Carol Cox Show here at KWAI, 1080 AM, and we're talking with Colonel Alexander Jefferson, retired Air Force Tuskegee Airman. And we'll take a call. And, feel free to call 808-888-5204. And keep your questions short. Or good morning, caller. Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Yo, what's up,
Carol? You have any comment or questions for Mr. Alexander?
Not really. I just don't.
Okay.
I got news for you. You've got to speak up because this old man is missing ears over the years. My hearing has gone to zero.
Yeah. Well, some people fail to raise their children in a respectful manner and to know not to tread on others. And
there you go.
And so we have to tolerate them, but it's okay. But we don't have to raise them.
There you go.
But this is going back with, let's call, go ahead with your comment or question.
Yeah, Carol, thanks for taking my call. Colonel, thank you for your service and your dedication in World War II. And beyond. I'm a son of a 442nd Veteran Infantry, Nisei soldiers of Japanese infantry. And they took a lot in the war.
Wait, hold tight. My hearing has gone to zero.
Yeah.
A little bit louder.
Sure. My dad was in the 442nd Regiment Combat Team.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah. Nisei soldiers of the Japanese ancestry. And, they were in ground troops fighting the Nazis over there in Germany.
That's right.
In the air. You always appreciate the Air Corps for having them, those bombers and folks coming over and getting the Germans in the front lines and everything. And I appreciate the Air Corps because without the Air Corps, the infantry couldn't move on. You guys are instrumental in doing the best you can to get our troops safely to completing their mission. And I appreciate that because
good.
My dad came back, raised a family. I'm a third generation Japanese.
Right.
And I appreciate what you did and your men, your unit did, as well as all the servicemen at that time.
442nd was above and beyond the call of duty.
Yes.
Their action in Italy mm-hmm. against the Germans, and there were many Medal of Honor winners.
Right.
And
I was fortunate to go with the veterans on a tour in 2002 to see the battle site.
Right.
And the cemeteries where they're buried still yet. And Monte Cassino was amazing. I couldn't believe how big that mountain is and how much the Germans had the high ground.
That's right.
They bombed that thing to its crumble and then they rebuilt it. And
we're very appreciative of their record, proven record, beyond the call of duty. Even with the conduct and things that happened back here in the States under the circumstances. I've read, of course, or much aware, that many of the persons, the way they were treated, put into, we don't call them concentration camps, we simply call them resources in Colorado. And very enviable record, 442nd was above and beyond the call of duty. And we appreciate it, look forward to it, and very thankful. Carol, they did a wonderful job.
Yeah, thank you for coming on the show, and I would come back to Hawaii.
Aloha. Thank you, sir.
Aloha, Donald. Thank you. Yeah, that the 442nd and many organizations or units.
Absolutely.
Fought to rescue people and proven that they love America. And isn't it funny, the hardships we're exposed to as black people in America? If some ask, well, why do you claim you love this country?
I got news for you. It's still the best thing on the face of the earth.
Best thing since my grandmother's chocolate cake.
It's not perfect.
No, if it was perfect, we'd still be complaining.
There you go. Exactly.
But the joy, I think what's good about America is that if you don't like it, you can work to change it if you're civil.
We have worked it. We have worked it as blacks, as Italians. We've all worked it over the years. And in my lifetime, black president, black congressmen, black doctors, black politicians, and now we have,
And your contributions to that cannot be disputed. That shaped that, because you were here in the Army, but you were in separate airfields. You were in the Army, but in separate units, but chasing the same enemy.
There you go. That's the main thing.
And then come back here, and you're relegated to some outpost in Podunk, Mississippi, that you did become a boy rather than a United States Air Force colonel.
Coming back on a troop ship out of France after the war. Troop ships get to the harbor of New York with the flags waving, Statue of Liberty, and I'm coming home. On the ship, there are approximately five or six black men coming down the gangplank. A little white soldier at the bottom of the gangplank, yelling, "Whites to the right, niggers on the left."
Mm-hmm.
Coming back home after 9 months in Germany as a prisoner of war with racism, and segregation, and discrimination in 1945. We had to fight like a son of a gun. In fact, our children, the children of veterans, helped to change this world in 1954.
Mm-hmm.
I tell everyone, old man Truman had the guts enough to pick up a pin. The war ended at 45. He had the guts enough in 48, on the record of the 442nd, Japanese Americans, the blacks in the tank arsenal, the blacks who fought in tanks, the black men of the, all the blacks in the Army and the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
He desegregated the military in 1948. And then our children are the ones who helped to change this world in 54, 55. And I just remember children trying to go to school, 55, 56. The world is great. America is great. And we helped to change this world. Our children did. I can remember them now standing up against a wall with fire hoses, dogs,
and guys with billy clubs and big guts.
Guys sitting on stools in
North Carolina. The four men who helped to integrate drug stores. Mm-hmm. One of them, McNair, became an Army officer. Yeah, we've gone through. We've contributed. Mm-hmm. We've contributed. Persons in the legislature, and finally the president. What a life, what a life, what a life.
Now, you know, I'm always cautious and concerned that when I say how much I love America and how dear it is to me and I love the values and whatever. Mm-hmm. But then we talk about how the Germans killed the Jews and the blacks were assaulted and hanged and lynched and all.
Yes.
But I also must be honest with myself and always remember that we should never forget the Native American and how their population was decimated.
God.
So that all of this nonsense that we experience,
yes,
on their backs, on their blood, because they too were decimated through this aggressive policy. So we need to speak to all of that and strike a balance.
Exactly.
In my opinion now, if the listeners out there don't like that, I can just tell you, I'm sorry that you got to listen to it. But it hadn't changed me from a child on. Even the Buffalo Soldier, as great as they are,
that's great.
But you think what they were doing and what capacity they were used in, Native people were decimated. We were being used as a tool. The European theater, maybe a slightly different one. We seem to have fought across. Not taking land. We were trying to free people and install. So I always remind myself and others that while I love America, I know about it, but I also know its history, and I don't want to be foolhardy and misrepresent that we've not addressed those.
Become aware of the Native people.
Yeah, and throughout the Caribbean, that Native people were decimated, and then we were planted on those islands as part of the slave trade to farm the sugar canes and all of those things, and the coconut and the whatever it was that they were. Let's see if there's a caller here. Caller, thank you for calling. You have a comment or question?
Yes, good morning.
Yes, go ahead. Talk up loud, please, if you would.
Yeah, thank you for your service, Mr. Jackson.
Thank you.
Where did you serve in Italy?
We were, first of all, the 99th Squadron, the 16 airplanes in one squadron, were a couple miles away from Naples, and they flew P-39s back and forth off the coast of Naples. And then
the 42nd entered Naples. Were you in support of them?
It was there.
Were you supporting the 442nd when they entered Naples?
No, we never supported 442nd. We went from coast patrols out of Naples to the north side of Italy on the Adriatic. That's where we went into P-51 Mustangs, supporting the bombers, the B-17s and the B-24s from Italy, who went up into Germany, and we flew top cover.
Slovenia and northern Italy, Yugoslavia.
What was that?
Did you get into Yugoslavia?
Oh, we flew. Oh, the B-17s went across Yugoslavia. Yes.
Were you in a B-17 or?
No, we were not in B-17s. No, we escorted the bombers.
Oh, you were escorted.
Yeah,
there were fighter planes.
Fighter. Oh, okay.
Scraping
where,
and.
Where were you shot down?
I was shot down later on, strafing radar stations on the coast of southern France.
That's on. You went from there, from Naples up to southern France, and that's on the west side of Italy.
No, we were stationed on the northern side of Italy.
Right
north of Naples to.
Were you. Captured over there, or
shot? I was captured in in southern France.
Oh, in
German occupied southern France.
Oh, I see. And were you taken prisoner?
Up to Germany.
Oh, you went to Germany.
Yeah.
He was taken prison and taken to Germany.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
As a POW.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you transferred by train?
Golly, I can't remember. Train, we walked.
Camel, anything.
I don't remember.
Wagon.
No, because they were bombing the train, were they?
Oh, yeah. We had to watch. We had to watch because we walked. And, other P-40s, jugs, P-47s were strafing trains and strafing trucks on the road. We had to worry about that. Yeah. Worry about getting killed by our own men.
There was scraping, strafing.
Yeah.
It's possible that you could have been a victim of American or British air fire.
Yeah, friendly fire or in the process of...
Surely.
And you were injured also, correct?
Yeah, when my parachute bailed out and going down through the trees, I had scratches and bruises, no broken bones.
Okay. Oh, okay. And then who captured you?
German soldiers.
German soldiers, yeah.
Thank God, because many of the American men who bailed out were captured by German civilians. And remember, we had bombed the hell out of cities. Many people have been killed. Many Americans captured by the civilians were killed.
They were mad at the Americans for bombing them?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay, caller, thank you.
All right.
It's a little bit difficult to hear you, but thank you. Any other question real quick before we let you go? Real quick.
In the prison for how long?
You were in prison for how long?
Oh, for 9 months.
9 months.
Mm-hmm. How were they treating you there?
As an officer and a gentleman, no beatings, no torture by the German government.
They treated you well?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
They did.
Did they respect the...
Okay, caller, we...
Respect.
I've offered you an opportunity to ask a couple of questions, but we're going to have to move on, all right?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you for calling.
You know, I want to make I want to interject something because we're talking about Native Americans, and there's this this swelling now of making comments about Mexicans. We tend to forget that Mexicans are also Native American people, so that always comes into play whenever I hear people making comments. So, it's something we need to, push.
The territory in Texas,
mm-hmm.
with Mexico, and how the Americans out of Tennessee occupied area in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
It was Mexican territory.
Yep.
And we had the Mexican War. That's how Texas became part of the United States.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something that everybody needs to remember.
That's right, exactly.
So my point is, for me, I don't want to celebrate any of this, but I also don't want to ignore it and become dumb, mm-hmm. down, and that we see these things present themselves. And some people say, well, how did Hitler get his way? And how did he, well, you stand back. Hitler didn't have Facebook. YouTube.
We did.
Email.
No, we didn't.
Social media. So today we're more vulnerable than Hitler could ever be effective. All you got to do is put one lie out there,
Yeah.
I mean, and then when we have people in higher up in government saying that civil disobedience, it has become a crime now, and it's no longer... welcome, and to hell with the Constitution,
because that's
what we're living by and building this, mm-hmm. country by the Constitution, only, mm-hmm. by certain standards for certain people.
Mm-hmm. Certain standards.
Certain status. And so I beg all parties out there that listen, that get trapped in this foolhardy skullduggery, this nonsense.
Nonsense.
If you're American, we don't think that American can be unraveled. But at the pace we're going with all of the misinformation, miscommunication, and there's an element of hatred in here.
Yeah.
And so some say, well, it's a black thing.
No.
Well, no, it's not. This hatred toward Jews, there's a fever out there of people openly talking about their hatred for Jews.
That's right.
Where in the heck did that come from? And why are we tolerating? It's one thing to be political and have a party, but if someone in your party starts speaking hatred toward Jews or blacks or others,
that's right.
You have to wonder, is it politics or are you just a stupid stick in the mud?
A lot of them are just stupid sticks in the mud.
So, you know, I what do you think, Colonel? I mean, have we gone too far with this partisan politics and what have you? Is there a danger?
We're like a big circle. Things aren't like... academically, it was in a big circle. Hitler, after World War I, convinced a lot of German people who felt betrayed and loss of land, loss of money in World War I. Hitler appealed to the civilians. We're going to be great again. Here's that same old thing. Going to make Germany great again. Build up his army. Build up his air force. And he appealed to many, many people. And they allowed him to express this business of being great. And the German people themselves, tremendously, were the ones against the Jews. And mm-hmm. we see that happening today. Mm-hmm. How the world is against the Jews, against the blacks. Lo and behold, we're going in a big circle.
Mm-hmm. But some of these circles have their foundation in hatred, and these people that are participating are haters anyway. They're just sick in the mind anyway when it comes to humanity.
To get real personal, it frightens me that today these people who have been under the table... races under the table and haven't said a word in 8 years. And all of a sudden today they're coming out from underneath the table expressing hatred
mm-hmm.
and going to make the world great again as Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Going to get rid of certain people. It's frightening.
Yeah, to make the world great again. How much greater can you get when you've transitioned from a slave trade, enslaving people, shooting and killing them and lynching them, and then being served by one of those as your president?
There you go. All of a sudden.
You know, that's why America's great again. All the dynamics and all the possibilities are possible, you know, and yes, we can. Mm-hmm. And then, like the Tuskegee Airmen, their motto should be, yes, we did.
Yes, we did. It's all part of the world.
You know, so anyway, this is the Carol Cox Show, and we're talking with Colonel Alexander Jefferson, retired Tuskegee Airman, and he has a book go to his website, Alexander Jefferson, that's Alexander Jefferson, Jefferson, Redtail, redtail.com. And you can actually place an order for a book there. He's going to be in town for about another 2 weeks or so. And and if you want to, you can give me a call or give him a call at the 313. Let me find my note here. 313-585-8647. I encourage you to sit and talk with him, folks. I mean, it's and he's at the Holly Core, so if you find your way down there, I'm sure you'll find him at the Barefoot Bar.
Yes, indeed. Well, we traveled all the way from Detroit with 10 below zero, with 3 or 4 feet of snow.
And drinking a good Mai Tai.
You better believe it.
Now, I do owe you one because I took you and Colonel Holloman.
Oh, yes.
And it was the nastiest drink, and I still feel like I let you down. So when you're here, if anybody out there know where there's the world's best Mai Tai in Honolulu,
right.
Please give me a call and let us know. Because I had one. I thought we had spilled jet fuel in the. So it was kind of disappointing. But anyway, we'll be back shortly, and we'll play a little music again. This is the Carol Cox Show, and we're going to see if he can share with us some of the other folks in his book and talk about the book. And it's Red Tail Captured, Red Tail Free. memoirs of a Tuskegee Airman, and he tells a story how he was shot down and imprisoned in POW camp. And he also, which I love, is that he listed a number of the men, black men and officers that were shot down or captured and
That's
spent
right.
time in prison, such as Edgar Bolden, Gene Brown, Harold Brown, and Lenz. I'll straight tell you when and where they were shot down. So it makes for an interesting reading and good history. So we'll be back shortly, and take care. Aloha.
Thank you. Above and beyond.
The second half of the Carol Cox Show, right after the news on KWAI Honolulu.
Aloha, this is Carol Cox. Please join me right here at KWAI 1080 AM from 9 o'clock to 11 a.m. on Sunday mornings. You can also catch us on podcasts at carolcox.com, CarolCox.com. You can also share your news tips with us at carolcox.com.
of the trees bear a strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root, black butter swinging in the southern breeze, strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pastoral scene of the gallant south, the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, sweet and fresh, then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is a fruit for the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to suck, for the sun to rot, for the tree to drop. Here is a strange and bitter cry.
Carol Cox Show, right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Beautiful day here in Hawaii, and I have the pleasure of having Mr. Alexander Jefferson, a retired colonel from the United States Air Force and a Tuskegee Airman. I didn't bother to plan this because there is so much, and when you give him the microphone, you can learn a lot just by looking. And so if there's no structure to this, you may think that there isn't, but if there's so much to be said, sometimes you can write yourself out of the good things because you got to say things you wrote down, and I don't like that. But this is being Black History Month anyway, and we have so many things occurring to nibbling away at our civil rights and what have you, and voter suppression and all of that. So for those of you who think that you are out of the woods, you might be out of the woods, but the concrete monster is still out there looking to devour you and eat your civil rights up. And you might not think it, and you might think you're immune to all of that's going around. But I got one word for you. Wake up.
Wake up. Because the world is closing in on you.
It's collapsing, and the brothers and sisters that you see walking around with a shopping cart, they too are Americans, and they are human beings. And so what is the difference between consigning someone to Mississippi and treating them with hatred and exposing them, or treating a person who is houseless the way we treat them here?
That's right.
Colonel, for example, now, you went off to war and knowing that there was great dangers,
but
you, as you stated, you want to serve your country and make a difference and contribute. Can you imagine, just here in Honolulu, there's allegations of the police department making a young man lick a urinal?
Are you kidding?
Yeah. Now, you know, if that's true, it's an allegation, and I wasn't
right
there, but
understand.
But imagine when we see these things, and like, I only spent 3 years in the Army, but I thought my contributions were great. I wasn't shooting at anybody, but the fact is,
I was in support,
you know, hauling the bullets and beans or whatever exactly. It is, you know, or the mail, which exactly. I had a more important role because if a soldier ain't getting mail, you ain't got a good soldier because he wants to know what's happening at home. So, Colonel, that's one of the things that before we get back to your book and talking about this, but
to be aware of what's going on, really, the extent of relations in this country. The reason why we went.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was often said that, was I afraid of the, what's that old saying, not afraid of the bullet was to whom is no concern.
Mm-hmm.
But under the circumstances, we were all in support of my country. I was always told, down through the ages, through my first Earth life, that this was not my country. I was always told that I was an immigrant. And lo and behold, when I thought about it, I said, my grandfather, all my kin folks have worked like hell to make this country.
Mm-hmm.
And my conviction, this is mine. And it's part of the reason why I joined the Army Air Corps. To defend it to the best of my ability, even being shot down and spending 9 months in Germany as a prisoner of war, and coming back to racism and segregation. But even then, we were still fighting the system, because old man Truman had the guts enough to pick up his pen in 1948 and demilitarize the military. Understandable.
Mm-hmm.
Until World War II was over, there were no black Navy officers. Think about it. Until 1945, World War II was over, you had black officers. Any black man in the Navy during World War II was this enlisted person. Only black officers. No black Marine officers until 1954. We helped to make this country. Our perseverance and our young people caused the Civil Rights Movement.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many things. We always said, this is our country. Nobody's going to take it away from us.
Right. And Jesse Owens, and when Jesse Owens ran, he wasn't running as a black man to make himself look good. He was running to make America look good.
To make America look good.
And we benefited from that because him doing what he did, showing that, well, it's unfortunate that...
Joe Lewis and Schmeling.
Yeah. It was, you know, the German knockout, right? I mean, it was a way of... The country was that's our man.
But in their instance,
it was that's our boy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a shame the contributions. You never a man, no matter what your contributions are to your country.
Always a boy.
You're always a boy, or an auntie.
Yeah.
you can relate to that, huh, Colonel?
I hate to express what Malcolm, House Negro, and Field Negro. There's a difference.
Oh yeah.
In the way he referred to them, I can't.
but the message here, I guess, what I say to young people, and in fact, I had a young man I was going to ask you, it's repetitive, but I told him that you were going to be on the show, and he said, well, and I told him that you had been shot down, and I didn't have the book to show the illustrations, and you did a lot of illustrations in the book, and we'll talk about that.
All right.
But he says, well, when you say he was shot down, was he like flying in the... spy plane, or was he? And I couldn't tell. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to ask you if you would, from the moment you got in your plane into flying until you were scraping. I told him, well, you were low level flying to scrape something, but I didn't. And I thought, I'm going to ask you if you could walk us through just that event. Just give us the feel. Let this young man hear it. He's listening now.
the Mustang is a single-engine, single-seat fighter plane, maximum speed of 400 miles an hour. But normally, the speed was approximately 200, 250 cruising speed. But our job this today, normally, we would fly top cover, escorting the bombers, the B-17s and B-24s, from Italy up into Germany, north to Germany, north to Ploesti, north to Yugoslavia, north to Austria, and northwest to France, bombing German facilities. But that day we were flying low level, strafing, going in and shooting up radar stations on the coast of southern France. A Mustang is a single engine, as I said before, single engine with a fantastic engine, and approximately, well, to tell you the truth, it's like sitting in an automobile. Your airplane is only about 2.5 feet wide and approximately 40 feet long. And strafing, you come down and you're doing 250-300 miles an hour, shooting up with 50 caliber, press the trigger on the stick, and the guns in the wings would fire. 50 calibers. Three on each side. And as I was going through at about 200 feet, the Germans shooting 50 caliber, 50 millimeter, or 20 millimeter, I tell you the truth, I don't know which. Anyway, the shell came up through the floor and put the thing on fire. So I had to pull up off the deck at about 250 miles an hour and bail out at about 800, I think. I don't have no idea. And pull the D-ring. The parachute came out. It was a seat, to tell you the truth. It was a seat. You're sitting on it. Mm-hmm. And it's hooked up to you with straps. And as you pull the D-ring, the parachute opens. And as it swung through, the first swing through, swung through the trees. And I got scratches and bruises. No broken bones. But it was German-occupied territory. And standing right next to her was a German officer, a German soldier. All I could say, to these days I hear him holler, Achtung, Achtung. And I could look at his eyes, and I could tell that he was astounded because of the color of my skin. Mm. But he saw the little gold bar on my collar, knew I was an officer, and he saluted me. All I could do, return the salute. But I was a POW from then
on. Hanging from the tree still, or in the parachute, or you'd cleared yourself by then?
No, I was trying to get out. In fact, he helped unbuckle me and slide to the ground. But that was my introduction to German-occupied territory of World War II. Remember, at the time, we were as Tuskegee Airmen, the 332nd Fighter Group made up of four squadrons. Each squadron had 16 airplanes. Of the 16 airplanes, by four, the first four were red flight. Second floor, red, white, yellow, blue. And all 16 airplanes made up. I was in the 301st Fighter Squadron. We also had the 99th Squadron, the 100th Squadron, the 301st, and the 302nd. On that day, we lost one man killed and three POWs along with me. I was one of the four. Yeah, that's it.
Now, the POW, you wrote this book and you put some illustrations in there, but first of all, the names there, you list a number of the officers, basically. It says that from the 332nd Fighter Group who were shot down and imprisoned in the There were in the prison camps of Nazi Germany.
There were 32. Mm-hmm. At the end of the war, by the end of the war, there were 32 black men who were POWs, prisoners of war. Remember, there were more than 100,000 American white officers shot down over German-occupied territory. Mm-hmm. 100,000 white airmen, and we were made up. We, at the end of the war, there were 32 of us. Mm-hmm. And as I said, from Germany to Athens, oh my God, I got them all listed.
Yeah, you have them. Many of them were Stalag, Luft 1.
That's right.
And Luft, and Stalag V, is that, what is that?
Stalag 3.
3, and A, and 7A, well, I guess
they all had designations.
So, Florence, Italy, Linz, Austria, Rome, so they were pretty much throughout the European theater.
We were all over the theater.
So they were actually flying and were captured, shot down or crashed, and then eventually being imprisoned.
That's it. They ended up in one. Stalag means camp, mm-hmm. German for camp. Mm-hmm. One, they were numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, and so forth, so on.
Okay. And in Spittal, Austria, so Austria had several, I guess, mm-hmm. they must have flown over a nest of serious gunners or something. Mm-hmm.
So this is where these men wound up, and we were treated as officers and gentlemen. No beatings, no torture, because the Germans and the Americans had sat down, German, American, English, and French, sat down in 1939 and signed the Geneva Convention, which were rules on how you treat POWs. And Germany acknowledged their own, because they were afraid of their own men being caught, to guarantee their condition. And that's why, as an American officer, I was placed in a camp with no beatings, no torture. The only thing detrimental was the fact we didn't have enough to eat. And in Germany, the same thing happened. Nobody in Germany had enough to eat. Mm-hmm. And if it had been for the Red Cross food parcels, we would have starved to death.
Mm-hmm.
We were supposed to get a food parcel. One man was supposed to get a box once a week. Once a month.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out we only got a half a box.
Yeah, you say in your book here, we'd wash, shave, brush our teeth, and then head for the mess tent. Where we'd eat some very strange-tasting food that I suspect was flavored by 100 octane gas that fueled the stove. And to add insult to injury, I gave you the worst Mai Tai.
So it was horrendous food.
So you wrote this book, and you included these paintings or cartoons. Now, was this done afterwards, or were you in prison when you wrote
this? This was done during the war, I mean, during our period of occupation, mm-hmm. because the Germans didn't care. They didn't care. Somebody mm-hmm. said, well, would they destroy them? Said, no. In fact, many of the German guards passing through, many of the men wrote these kinds of things. We didn't have anything else to do. Mm-hmm. Many of the men made these cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's one, the Luft Gangster in his heyday. What is with that one? There's a guy standing at a Margot.
Yeah, that was Margot. Mm-hmm. I was standing at Margot.
Oh, that is you. You're depicting you there standing at the Margot. What was the Margot?
Margot was about 5'4". She weighed about 110.
Oh, so it's not a plane.
Small plane. Very small plane.
Some of the guys put their girlfriends on the plane. Some guys placed their mothers Uh-huh. Others, the city.
Mm, on their plane. And your plane was called?
Margo.
Margo. Oh, I see.
Margo was about 5'4". Yeah, 5'4".
And this was your girlfriend back home.
And, by the way, when I got home, Margo had been taken care of by one of my good buddies.
Well, that's at the same cadence when we were in basic training. Ain't no use of going home. Jody's got your girl.
Jody, there you go. Exactly. And there's a picture. There's a picture of the.
There's Margo.
There's Margo.
Ah. Uh-huh.
Page 36.
36 page.
Go to 34 first.
Yeah, I think you got to go and, guys, go and get this book. And this is, it's written, authored by Lieutenant Colonel, retired Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Jefferson. You can go to the website at alexanderjeffersonredtail.com.
There you go.
I just think for the historical value of it, that's a living piece of history. And then having you here to share it. There's another cartoon on 46, at, No Not That. What is with that one?
That was intelligence. Army intelligence, which was supposed to tell us what's going on. Mm-hmm. And it was always wrong. We would expect just the high explosions, flak. Flak would tell us the flak would be at 30,000 feet.
Right.
And by the time we got over the target, the flak was at 35.
Oh.
Always opposite of where we were supposed to go.
So you coming in at 31 and thinking it won't reach me, and you're in the midst of it.
Bing. And they would tell us that we were supposed to meet the B-17s. And when we got to the arrival point, lo and behold, there were B-24s.
So you would know if you were in the right area because your
Army intelligence.
Escort beasts.
Army intelligence always wrong. That's why the guy says, oh, God, no, not that. With another.
And then there's the hitting the blue on page 48. That I just enjoyed reading early on these cartoons and thought, maybe what does it really mean?
It's the experience of flying.
Mm-hmm.
You leave in the morning, just think, 75 airplanes all starting up at the same time.
Wow.
It's exciting.
And the smell of
the smell of the gas.
The gas. And
now you're sitting in your plane, you're loaded up 92 gallons in each side, each wing.
Mm-hmm.
92 gallons. Hanging underneath, you got 110 gallons of tanks on the right and left underneath. Sitting behind you, there's an 85-gallon tank inside right behind you.
So you could limp home on that if you're really ready.
That's it. And the exchange, our distance was 1,000 miles. Why, we could fly from Italy to Berlin and get back.
Mm-hmm.
It was exciting, just the fervor of a P-51 Mustang.
But if you were engaged, you could end up consuming some of that and fall short.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And I noticed on another page here, the crippling, bringing home a cripple. It seemed to speak for itself, but one of B-17 and B-24.
When they're all shot up and... When they're shot up like that, they lose speed. They're susceptible to German fighters come along.
Mm-hmm.
We come along and pick them up, and we bring them home. That's the idea of bringing home a cripple.
Okay, and you'd be right there watching them to make sure nobody would try to finish them off.
But you have to understand, on that bomber, there were 10 men, 4 officers, pilot, co-pilot, navigator, and bombardier. 4 officers. And then 6 enlisted men.
Mm-hmm.
The top gunner, the tail gunner, the bottom gunner, and a gunner in each window. You wind up with 10 men. As you bring these men home, That's the name of the game.
That was your reward.
Our reward.
You left home to protect these guys, and you... That's like Red Tail, or the movie Red Tail, and they talk.
And the irony, down basically, the irony of the whole situation. Blacks are not allowed to fly in the bombers.
At that time?
At that time, segregation. Because we could not go to school with whites.
Okay.
The training sessions, we're not allowed to go to basic bomber training. That's the irony of the whole thing.
We have a caller here. Let's see what the... Caller, thank you for calling. You have a comment or question?
Hi, Carol. I just wanted to really thank you for this newest interview with Alexander Jefferson. For me, I believe this is more important than the Super Bowl. This is really gives a bowl of hope.
Well, the Super Bowl
just such
today.
An important dialogue about adversity and helping us understand where we are today. And I just wanted to say, I got Alexander's book several years ago, and I had given that one to the grandkids for the family. But in October in Charlotte, North Carolina, I was able to get a new book with all these great art drawings. And it was so important what Alexander wrote, signed to me in this book. It says, "Freedom ain't free." Alexander's
That's
Jefferson,
correct.
10/20/2017, and I just want to thank you folks. So I'm going to cherish this book, and I think this is an important dialogue.
Okay, thank you.
Freedom ain't free. Somebody's got to pay for it. And I look back and become aware. We left the men who played it. We left them in the soil of Germany, France, Austria, Bulgaria, Athens, Italy, all the men who paid for freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the men in Arlington, the white crosses from the Civil War all the way up through like World War I and World War II. The men who paid for our freedom.
Now, these illustrations, these are all yours? Or
oh, yes.
And where most of them were they done?
While
in prison.
In Sagan. By the way, Sagan was in Poland. The German occupied side of Poland. That's where I started out. The first 4 or 5 months in Poland.
As a captive.
Then when the Russians started coming through, we were transferred to a camp near Munich. The rest of these were done near Munich.
Mm-hmm. So, what the well-dressed pursuit pilot wears on a mission. I just, the cartoons or the illustrations serves me well. I mean, just thinking, to imagine.
You can imagine being dressed with heavy gloves, heavy boots, the parachute, the Mae West.
Mm-hmm.
The Mae West is for water.
Flotation device.
Flotation.
Mm-hmm.
And
when you were on the runway or getting ready to leave all the large number of planes, is it by sight in the control or was it by radio?
By sight.
So they were able to orchestrate all of that busy when
all
75 planes at once, or you 300,
right.
What, how many?
On one airfield.
One airfield, and they're all revving up. And so
that's when you get scared, because you're sitting there with your feet on the brakes, waiting for the other squadron at the other end of the runway. They come down, take off right in front of you.
Right.
And some of these guys didn't have complete control, and the danger of running into you was imminent. That's
mm-hmm.
the only time I really got scared.
Mm.
To see a guy passing by no more than 10 feet away.
Wobbling or not full control.
That's right.
In the wind, depending on the wind and the weather.
That's it.
So those were the most nervous moments.
The only, really only time, well, I can't express that.
Now, there's this one that I got going for the kill.
at the Toulon Harbor. What was that? Is that you in that illustrating?
I'm in the left hand. Right on the left.
Oh, so you're in this scraping.
That's right.
So
you could see the guns firing,
mm-hmm.
the gunfire, and the Germans shooting back, because you see these red streaks coming back at you.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw Danny over on the right-hand side out of my peripheral vision. There are four of us. One, two, three, four.
Mm-hmm. I see
and
them
I
there.
Saw him when he got hit. Black smoke. Danny was afraid to bail out. And he put his plane down in the water. Mm. The Germans went out and picked him up.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I went right across the top of the target at about 200 feet.
Is this where you were shot down?
That's where.
This is at the radar station, then?
Those are the radar stations on the coast.
I see. Okay.
I remember coming out, fire of the tail going by, and I pulled the D-ring because I looked down and saw the trees. I don't know how high it was, about 800 feet.
Mm.
And when the parachute popped, I was swinging, the first swing, through the trees on the right. When I drew the picture, I couldn't draw the German soldier because of the in POW camp. But that's very true.
And this one called titled Captured, where you have your dog tags and your the swastika in the picture there. What is that? I want to ask you what. You see, you don't remember much else about the camp life at Ramatelli, except that I still made my model airplanes.
What page?
Page 54. See, when I start reading this book, it's like, once again, it's you like you're feeling it there. It's, you have...
Oh, those are the three dog tags.
Mm-hmm.
The one at the top, Alabama. Alabama,
mm-hmm.
with the dog tag of American dog tag. And the right there is the swastika. Over the right, the officer dog tag.
Right, okay.
And down at the bottom, a German dog tag.
Okay.
When you were in the Army, you had two tags. If you were killed, you take one tag and put it in the victim's mouth for identification.
Mm-hmm.
And the German, you could break that tag in two. You could break it in two, make two. That's the German dog tag at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
7538.
38. I see the perforation in it, so you'd break it.
Creighton and Logan, third.
Now, this book, again, it's available for... good price, $40.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at this, you have there's four or five the civilian. I guess this is when you were exiting the military on page 119. I was going to ask you what was that picture.
119. Ah. I came home and I became an instructor down at Tuskegee for the men coming through the program.
Okay.
And these are other men who were in the group.
And they went on to follow you.
They went on to follow me.
And did they see military, foreign service?
Some of these did, yes, because they went over, exactly.
So you went over and got your experience and your training and came back, trained them.
Trained other men to take my place who became part of these other squadrons.
Mm-hmm. I think this book is just really appropriate. In fact, on page 118, you say that, but then going down the gangplank, a short, smug, white buck private shouted, "Whites to the right, niggers to the left."
That's right.
Quote. It was very discouraging upon returning to the United States to find racism, segregation,
mm-hmm.
and other social ills alive and well. I know them. I knew then I was back home.
Stark reality.
Mm-hmm.
So that must be one of the cheapest feelings, you being cheap, because of what you've given and the strive to get, and this smacks you right in the face.
But still with a determination to improve it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we became teachers after the war. And unconsciously, I helped to raise some kids who were responsible for the civil rights movement in Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you have been quite active
Yesterday, I had a visitor at the Barefoot Bar. In 1972, I counseled a young man, a high school grad in Detroit, to the Air Force Academy,
mm-hmm.
Dale Andrews. Dale Andrews finished Air Force Academy and became airline pilot. He flies 777. He altered his program
mm-hmm.
yesterday so that he was free to come and look me up. Yesterday I met Dale Andrews for the first time since 1975. 1980? Yes. One of the men whom I counseled to take my place at the Air Force Academy.
Is that right? And then he's here visiting you.
He visited me yesterday. Part of his... He flies for United. The 777. You know that big...
Mm-hmm.
Guard.
And you trained him in his first...
I was instrumental in him going to the Air Force Academy, where blacks at that time were 1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh.
Well, you've made great contribution, and as I said in the opening part of the show earlier, as a kid, a black kid in Mississippi,
that's right.
I can sit here and openly tell you that the inspiration and all the things in Tuskegee Airmen, that was something. You look to the skies and you barely would see an airplane when I was growing up.
That's right.
They
exactly.
weren't that common. You know, crop dusters, maybe the old helicopter with the bubble they'd use for crop dusting occasionally. But you've had, I'm sure many other people can speak to this and say the same thing.
Thanks.
Your presence as a Tuskegee Airman has inspired many of people in that story. And we are grasping for straws nowadays for looking for examples.
That's right.
I noticed that our president, current president, strikes out at everything that's black. Yeah. Everything. And, I mean, he's gone through the list
make
of them. I don't
so
care.
Obvious.
If you were giving away snowballs in
obvious.
The desert, he would have some issue with
obvious
it. If you were right.
To eliminate Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Eliminate Obama.
Yeah.
We eliminate the current care of Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Why in the so-and-so didn't he have the attitude of take the care and improve it?
Right.
Period. There's so many things he could have done to improve.
Well, see, the thing is, if it's broken, fix it. But it wasn't broken, so therefore he couldn't fix it.
And
was no need to fix it. So, in other words, tear it down completely.
Tear it down completely.
And, you know,
That's what hates me. That's what I hate about the whole system. This is my system.
Yeah.
I sweat it. I think about the number of other people who have paid the price. And you get at this place to destroy it. The attitude of basically trying to destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
The best society that's ever been formed on the face of the earth. The best society
mm-hmm.
to make it better.
Yeah.
My attitude.
Well, we see this discussion open, and Richard, I'm going to let you get we talked about ISIS, and we talk about how evil they are, and they are
yes.
evil.
Mm.
And they're destroying cultural sites and historical sites.
They just and destroyed a Christian site or an error in the everything. They're going through and killing
Any Christians.
Mm-hmm. But then we have a president here that is invoking the same practice of destroying, and many people, oh, well, you know, there's a black thing going off on that tangent. No, it's a reality. When the president of the United States has the ability to strike out at anything that he does not like black, and there's a list of them, and publicly make it so... I'm saying this to say that those of you out there that think that it's over, it's just begun.
As long as he's in office, if they can get him out of office, then that's a different thing. You know, I'm from New York, so I've seen...
Poor thing.
I've seen... I know, that's why I left. So I've seen him over the years, and he's always been, and I'm going to be truthful from my observation, because I grew up on Eastern Long Island, so, I mean, I've seen money, you know, the Hamptons and all that stuff.
Exactly.
And he's always wanted to be one of those. But they pretty much shunned him because he was just low class. Mm-hmm. So it's always been humorous to watch. And then the comments that he would make, and one that you go back to when they had the Central Park 5, and he put out a 2-page spread in the New York Times talking about, yeah, we need to kill them and bring back the death penalty. And then we find out that they were not guilty. Mm-hmm. He has never said anything about that, of course. You know, but that's just, he's always been just ignorance with money. Mm-hmm. And not even a lot of money, just...
Somebody else's money. Russian money.
Yeah, he's always ripped people off. Yeah. That's his, you know, modus operandi.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just had a lot of people who were ignorant enough to vote for him, thinking that he was going to do something.
Mm-hmm.
But he hasn't done anything.
Well, I was going to take a minute and offer this. I want everybody to know that me as the Carol Cox Show, me as the Carol Cox... I support the FBI. I believe, you know, no matter what you think, what the allegations are, the innuendos that are out there about the FBI, I support them. I trust that they have a greater interest in protecting America because that's what they do every day.
Yeah.
This man has presented some examples to us that does not speak that he gives a damn about America. And I'm sorry, you know, but this is something. I support the FBI, and I believe that it's a very sad day that any true American citizen that listened to the 8 years of taking our country back, and then we're going to take it back, and we're going to clean it, and we're going to lock the borders down, and then turn around and belittle and denigrate. Let your president denigrate the FBI and others.
Yeah, and I mean, the FBI.
I think we're on opioids now or something, because only a drug person that is out of their mind would follow such a practice or such a flow, regardless. And if there's an investigation, let the investigation play itself out. What's wrong with that?
That's it.
So, you know, I thought, well, maybe I'd put it on the board and stand over the overpass and holding up, I support the FBI.
That's right.
And I ask everybody out there, look, if you can't live, this is a nation of laws, right, Colonel?
That's the basic thing.
And
improve it.
Yeah.
Rather than destroy it.
Yeah.
See, that's why I went to France. That's why I was a fighter pilot. That's why I fought against Germany. This is part my country. And he's destroying it.
Mm-hmm.
I see it being crumbled.
I mean, imagine destroying the FBI and the intelligence agencies. So if we were in a skirmish and you got shot down,
exactly,
the intelligence would have been able to gather information to let us know where you are so that maybe we could raid it or whatever. Am I correct?
That's the name of the game.
This is the thing that we are overlooking, or we're not looking at it anyway.
Yeah, but Trump is doing the same thing Hitler did. Discrediting the news, discrediting the agencies so that he can, you know, manipulate what he wants to manipulate. And he has no idea why he's even doing this. I mean, other than the fact that, you know, he just thinks that, well, I got a little money and it's all about me and my money. Yeah. But, yeah, discrediting the FBI. The FBI is not, they're no angels.
Well, but see.
But they're the best thing we
have.
Yeah,
but when someone like Trump or even Carol Cox stands up and make false allegations or make nonsensical allegations against the FBI, it's no time to go, well, the FBI is not that perfect. We're not putting
Their credibility
on the line.
They're proven.
It's the bearer of those bad statements that we should focus on. Rather than getting mixed up in whether, well, you know, they're not perfect. You're inviting, you know.
Yeah, but that's a lot of stuff in the past.
Yeah.
You know, they know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. How can you question them?
Yeah.
It gets frightening to me. The way Hitler convinced people of Germany who had tremendous number of German civilians who had a bad attitude. Because Germany came out second best in World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump is catering to the same type of people here in this country.
Yeah.
With a false attitude, tear it down.
Yeah, you know.
The people who have been under the table for the past 8 or 9 years, these people who hated Obama, they have got no reason why. Simply because Obama was Obama.
Yeah.
Right. Tear it down. The character system, something that we should have had 100 years ago.
Yeah.
It had a few little errors here and there. Why in the heck didn't Trump take the care system and fix it and add to it and make it better?
Right.
No, his attitude, Obama, tear it down. Get rid of it. Tear it down. We've heard that ever since he...
And God bless the rest of them that are supporting him in Congress. That is shameful. Yeah. I don't know what day they're going to get their medicine, but I believe the truth will prevail.
Somewhere.
And I'm hoping that one day that they have the guts to apologize to the FBI, the intelligence agencies, because these are the very people that are looking for people that's out there to kill them. That you understand? Yeah. We have people targeting congressmen, like at the baseball park, right?
There you go.
And who is going to be responsible for investigating that? Mm-hmm. The FBI and others.
And they put their life on the line also.
Yeah.
You
follow.
But they won't apologize. They'll retire and go on about their business.
Yeah.
The
congressmen.
The ones who are making the statements.
There you go.
Thank you, Colonel Alexander Jefferson. And I see there's a couple people calling. I won't have time to call if they want to. I give you a statement. Yeah, let's see. Caller, you have a statement real quick.
That's very shameful. You started out with a good program and then it turned into an attack from Trump.
Okay, well, thank you for listening, and we appreciate you. Caller, go ahead with your comment or question.
Yeah, Colonel, I recently got, actually I've been blind for a couple of years, but is your book on audio format so I can listen to
Is your book in audio format, Colonel?
No, not yet.
Not yet. He's working on it.
I appreciate it.
All right, done. Thank you. Well, there was one gentleman, he wants to call up, and he wants to take a stick and stir the syrup, but we've already processed that, you're saying this because you're black, and it's a black thing.
We're saying this because it's the truth.
We passed this road a long time ago, and so sometimes when you see a steaming pile of poo, you just ignore it and don't step in it and deal with it.
And keep right on moving.
Yeah, this is America, and it's no place for people that want to steal it.
Yeah.
Period.
And his book is about history.
Yeah.
You know, and you live through it. You live through the kind of dictators who would ruin the world. Because it wasn't just a local skirmish. It was a world war.
It was a worldwide skirmish.
Yeah.
It's still going on today.
Yeah. Well, one thing, I love it when people of this ilk, as this caller says, your show was wonderful up until then. We did a good job. Everybody pat yourself on the back. I'm sorry.
My attitude, beautiful. Got my story. Unconsciously, it got my story across.
Well, thank you, Colonel Alexander Jefferson. Thank you again. It's a pleasure, always. I love you for the truth that you speak. And you're not you've given so much. And
that's it.
And I hope to have you back, and you're going to be here for a while, and we'll talk. And Richard, thank you.
You're welcome.
And,
Richard, thank you, buddy. Thank you.
Ernestine Laverne. And that is the granddaughter, and she's in the studio. Didn't get the chance to talk with her, but you can call at
313-585-8647.
And you can either make a request for autographs, a book. He has about two boxes of books here with him, and so if you want to try and meet him in person, call that number, and let's coordinate, and you can pick up a book. Thank you guys for joining me, and I appreciate
you.
Everything you've done. This is the Carol Cox Show. And, Carla, thank you for telling us. I was wondering how good the show was. things come in so I just don't know. I'm elated now. I want to have another one. And sorry I would say, as you described, hang up on you, but... Hey, when you can, you do.
When you can. Please excuse me.
Aloha. And thank you. We'll be back next week. Aloha.
By the way.
What a difference a day makes. 24 little hours. Brought the sun and the flowers. Where they used to be red. My yesterday's with blue dear. Today I'm part of you dear. My lonely nights are through dear. Since you said you were mine. What a difference a day makes. There's a rainbow before me. Skies above can't be stormy. They made, and the difference is you.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. Tune in again.
Only save on Facebook.